Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman Corn. So one of my motivations for getting into maybe the more advanced side of home networking has been actually moving apartment a few times over the course of the past few years here in Israel. And the more stuff you have set up on a home network or any network, I guess, whether that's an NAS or a home server, you know, stuff like that, the more frustrating and annoying it becomes to have a very disruptive move, not only physically, because let's face it, when you're moving your stuff around the world or around a city, IP addresses are the last thing anybody's thinking about. But when you finally get past that stage and you unpack your boxes and you think you're finished with this, when you then have to realize that everything you kind of took time setting up, local IPs, backup jobs, all has to be set up again because the network has changed, that's a real pain in the backside. So after our last move, I decided to figure out a way that I wouldn't be in the situation again. And that was when I installed OpenSense in order to have some piece of hardware that I owned for managing the network, DHCP, and that I could just kind of drag and drop. If I moved to a new apartment, even got a new type of internet, set that up, everything's already kind of managed, networked DHCP. And you just swap out the ISP box for whatever they give you, because that's usually the way it goes here. So that so far, well, we haven't had a move since I did that, but I'm very hopeful that I'm now in a much better position to move, I guess, anywhere, right? I mean, that's kind of the cool thing. When I was looking into this question of, wait, so how can I do this in a smarter way? There was two groups of people I was thinking about that these guys must really know how to move networks. Those two were, they don't have much in common. One, roadies, like musicians. I have a few friends who work in audio and entertainment, and they have some pretty crazy gear for, you know, mixers and everything else. I don't even know what half of it is, but it's a huge network. And I always think that when these guys go on tour on a show, not just the lighting and the rigging is its own crazy setup, but just keeping all that gear network together. I presume they've got this down to a pretty fine art. The second one is the military. This, I guess, has its own requirements for encryption and whatever. But these are also networks that I imagine have to be stood up and moved on very short notice. So I've heard about something called network in a box related to this concept, that people just bring about a router and kind of have it in a hard case and it can go on a plane. But I'm very curious to know from those who are really experts at moving networks physically around the world between places, what are some of the pro moves and the pro tips that might be relevant to people who are just renting their places and just are tired of configuring static IP leases. Herman and Corn, let's talk about moving networks today.
So, Herman, I was looking at that rack in the hallway this morning, and it hit me just how much work we put into setting that up after we moved into this place here in Jerusalem. I mean, between the storage servers, the home automation hubs, and the various access points, it is a lot of infrastructure for three guys in an apartment. I remember carrying that 16-unit rack up the stairs and thinking, if we ever move again, I am just leaving it here for the next tenant and starting my life over as a Monks tenant.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service, and you are not wrong, Corn. It is a beast. But do you remember the absolute chaos of the first 48 hours after we moved in? We were trying to get the internet stable while also unpacking kitchen boxes. You were trying to find the coffee grinder, and I was hunched over a terminal trying to figure out why the smart lights in the bathroom thought they were still in our old place in Tel Aviv. It was a nightmare of conflicting subnets and forgotten passwords.
Exactly. It was the digital equivalent of finding out your keys don't fit the new locks. and that is why Daniel's prompt today really resonated with me. He was talking about how moving apartments is already stressful enough, but moving a sophisticated home network is its own special kind of headache. He mentioned that he actually installed OPN Sense on his own hardware recently to manage his own DHCP. That way, he can just drop his entire network into a new place regardless of what the internet service provider gives him. He's basically trying to build a portable digital fortress.
That is such a pro move. Daniel is really onto something there. It is the classic abstraction layer approach. In computer science, we always say that any problem can be solved by adding another layer of indirection, and that applies to physical locations too. Instead of letting the ISP's cheap lockdown router dictate how your internal devices talk to each other, you build your own wall. You tell the ISP, "Look, just give me a raw internet connection. I will handle the routing, the firewall, and the address assignment myself." You are essentially turning the ISP into a dumb pipe.
Right, and Daniel was asking about how the actual pros do it. You know, the people who move massive, mission-critical networks every single day. He mentioned roadies on tour with big bands and the military with their network-in-a-box concepts. I'm curious, Herman, because I know you've been reading up on touring infrastructure lately. What can a renter who is tired of reconfiguring static IPs every year learn from a roadie who has to set up a stadium-sized network in 4 hours?
Oh, I love this angle. The touring world is fascinating because they are dealing with zero-fail environments. If the network goes down during a show in 2026, the lights stop moving, the sound cuts out, and 40,000 people start booing. We are talking about protocols like Dante for audio and SACN for lighting. One of the biggest takeaways from the professional touring world is the concept of the rack-mounted gold standard. They do not think in terms of individual devices, they think in terms of systems.
The gold standard? Like, they have one perfect configuration they never change?
Pretty much. Think about a massive concert tour for someone like Taylor Swift or U2. They have these huge rolling racks full of switches, processors, and amplifiers. They do not reconfigure those devices every night. They use what is called a persistent internal architecture. Everything inside that rack and everything that connects to it has a predefined role and a predefined address that never, ever changes. They use something called a fly pack. It is a self-contained, shock-mounted rack that is designed to be wheeled off a truck, plugged into power, and work instantly.
So even if they are in a stadium in London one night, and a club in Paris the next, the internal logic is identical. The devices don't even know they have crossed an ocean.
Exactly. They use a technique called IP aliasing, or sometimes just very strict internal subnetting. No matter what the venue provides for an outside connection, the internal show network remains on its own island. They usually have a dedicated head-end router, often something high-end like a Juniper or a custom-built OPN Sense box that handles the translation. It is very similar to what Daniel is doing. He is essentially building a portable island. In the touring world, they call this the production network. It is isolated from the guest Wi-Fi and the venue network. It is a sovereign entity.
That makes sense for the software side, but what about the physical side? I feel like that is where most renters fail. We just throw cables in a box, get to the new place, and then spend 3 hours untangling what looks like a giant bowl of plastic spaghetti.
That is where the roadie discipline really shines. If you look at a professional touring rack, every single cable is labeled at both ends. And I do not just mean a piece of tape that says internet. I mean heat shrink labels that specify the exact port on the exact switch. For a renter, the pro tip here is documentation and physical standardization. If you use a patch panel in your home rack, you never have to reach behind a server to unplug things. You just unplug the front of the patch panel, and the internal wiring stays untouched. It is about protecting the internal state of the machine.
I remember we talked about physical connections way back in episode 77, when we were obsessing over USB-C. The idea was having one port to rule them all. In a moving context, it sounds like having one interface to rule them all is the key. Like a docking station for your entire life.
Precisely. In the touring world, they use these heavy-duty multi-pin connectors called SOCAPEX, or specialized EtherCon connectors from Nutrik. They are designed to be plugged and unplugged thousands of times without failing. Now, a renter does not need military-grade circular connectors, but using a simple patch panel turns your move from a wiring project into a plug-and-play project. You are moving a single unit, not a collection of parts. You want to reach a state where you only have three cables to plug in at the new place, power, WAN, and maybe one trunk line to a secondary switch.
Okay, so we have the touring side, which is all about speed and repeatability. But Daniel also mentioned the military. I have heard about these network-in-a-box systems. How does that differ from the touring world? I imagine the stakes are a bit higher than a concert going dark.
The military side, often called tactical communications or deployable nodes, adds a layer of ruggedization and autonomy that is really impressive. They have these kits called small form factor nodes, or SFF nodes. Companies like Class Telecom or Packstar make these. Imagine a Pelican case that contains a router, a switch, a small server for local files, and often a satellite or cellular uplink. They are designed to be dropped into a desert or a jungle and provide a full enterprise network in minutes.
So it is truly independent. It does not even need a local ISP to function. It brings its own Skylink.
Right. And the lesson there for the advanced home user is redundancy, and what they call day zero connectivity. When you move into a new apartment, it often takes a week or two for the fiber guy to show up and actually activate your line. If you have built your network like a military tactical node, you have a secondary WAN port, probably connected to a 5G modem or even a Starlink dish. In 2026, 5G speeds are high enough that you can run a whole household on them temporarily.
Oh, I see where this is going. You move the box in, you plug it into the wall for power, and your entire house is immediately online via cellular while you wait for the permanent line. All your devices, your NAS, your smart lights, they do not even know they moved. They just see the same gateway they have always seen. You are essentially spoofing your old apartment's digital environment.
Exactly. You have eliminated the transition period. In the military, they call this PACS planning. It stands for primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency. Your primary is your fiber. Your alternate is your 5G. Your contingency might be a Starlink dish on the balcony. For a renter, just having that alternate 5G ready to go in your OPNSYNS config is a massive quality of life upgrade. You can be on a Zoom call while the movers are still carrying in your mattress.
That is brilliant. It is moving the focus from the connection to the gateway. But let's talk about the static IP issue Daniel mentioned. He is tired of reconfiguring static IP leases. If you have 40 devices with reserved addresses, how do you handle that when the new apartment might have a different gateway address or a different subnet requirement from the ISP? I have seen people try to change their whole internal network to match the new ISP router, and it always ends in tears.
This is a common point of friction, but here is the secret. You should never, ever let the ISP dictate your internal subnet. Most ISP routers want to put you on 192.168.1.0. If you rely on that and your next ISP uses 192.168.0.0, everything breaks. Your NAS is looking for a gateway that does not exist.
So you pick a weird one. You go off the beaten path.
Exactly. Pick something in the 10.0.0.0 range, or a less common part of the 172.16 range. Set your OPNSYNS box to that range. Now, it does not matter what the ISP router thinks. Your internal world is always 10.50.0.x. Your static leases are tied to the MAC addresses of your devices within that OPNSYNS database. When you move the database with the hardware. The OPNSYNS box provides the same DHCP leases regardless of whether the internet is coming from a fiber line in Jerusalem or a satellite in the middle of the Atlantic.
It is like carrying your own private zip code with you. No matter where you go, your house number stays the same.
That is a great way to put it. And here is a second order effect people miss, security. When you use the ISP's default subnet, you are using the most targeted addresses in the world. By moving to a custom internal scheme and managing it yourself, you are adding a tiny bit of obscurity, but more importantly, you are maintaining total control over your firewall rules. Those rules move with you. If you have a rule that says your smart fridge cannot talk to the open internet, that rule stays active during the move. You do not have to remember to set it up again on a new router.
I like that. But what about the hardware itself? We have our 16-unit rack, but for someone living in a smaller apartment, a full 19-inch rack might be overkill. Are there pro ways to keep things portable without looking like a data center? I know some people use those IKEA lac tables, but those are not exactly travel friendly.
Absolutely. There has been a huge surge in what people call short depth racks or even vertical racks. But if you want to go full military style, you look at half rack units. There are companies that make these small, ruggedized enclosures that fit things like a Mac Mini, a small switch, and a router. It looks like a piece of high-end luggage. You can literally put it in the passenger seat of your car when you move. In 2026, we are seeing more fanless, high-performance, ARM-based networking gear that does not need massive cooling, which makes these small form factors much more viable.
That sounds a lot more manageable than our current setup. I am thinking back to episode 26, where we talked about mastering Beta-Offs and ZFS snapshots. If you have a NAS in that portable rack and you're doing regular snapshots, you also have the peace of mind that if something gets bumped during the move and a drive fails, you have that data integrity. But physical shocks are still a worry.
Yes, and that brings up a huge point about physical safety during a move. Pros use something called shock mount racks. These are racks within racks, separated by rubber dampers. For a home user, if you are moving a NAS with spinning disks, you really should pull the drives before the move or make sure the entire unit is cushioned. But the real pro tip in 2026 is to move to all flash storage for your portable network.
Because SSDs do not care about being bounced around in a moving truck. They are basically solid blocks of silicon.
Exactly. In 2026, the cost of 4TB or even 8TB SSDs has dropped enough that for a core home server, you can go entirely solid state. That makes your network in a box much more durable. You could literally drop the case, and as long as the motherboards do not crack, your data is fine. No head crashes, no mechanical failure. It is the ultimate peace of mind for a digital nomad or a frequent mover.
Okay, so we have the persistent IP scheme, the abstraction layer with OPN sense, the physical patch panel, and the ruggedized or all-flash hardware. What about the setup at the new place? Is there a pro tip for the actual day of arrival? Because even with a perfect box, you still have to interface with the new building.
Yes, it is called the site survey and the pre-flight check. Before you even move a single box of clothes, you should find the media cabinet or the phone jack in the new place. Pros will actually go into a venue days before a show to map out where the cables will run. For a renter, this means knowing exactly where your portable rack will live and how you will get wires to your desk or your TV. You do not want to realize on move-in day that the only fiber jack is in the back of a dark closet with no ventilation.
And if the apartment is poorly wired, which they often are, what is the pro move? I have lived in places where the only Ethernet port was in the kitchen for some reason.
MoCA adapters are specialized wireless backhauls. MoCA, or multimedia over coax, lets you use the existing cable TV wires in the walls to carry gigabit or even 2.5 gigabit Ethernet. If you have those adapters pre-configured as part of your network in a box, you just plug them into the wall jacks in the new place, and suddenly your bedroom has a hardwired connection to the rack in the living room. You are essentially hijacking the building's old infrastructure for your modern network.
That is a huge time saver. I'm starting to see the pattern here. The professionals spend 80% of their time on the prep, so that the actual deployment takes 20%. It is about front-loading the effort.
That is the golden rule. If you are reconfiguring a static IP on moving day, you have already failed the pro test. You should be able to plug in one power cable, one WAN cable, and have the entire house come alive. Your phone should connect to the Wi-Fi before you have even put the key in the lock for the second time.
It is funny we are talking about this as a convenience for renters, but it feels like this is the direction everything is going. More people are working remotely, more people are digital nomads. The idea of a fixed, static home network feels a bit 21st century. We are moving into an era of the personal area network that just happens to be anchored in a physical building for a while. Your network is a bubble that follows you.
I totally agree. And it connects back to what we were discussing in episode 210 about predictive motion and robotics. We are seeing systems that are designed to adapt to new environments instantly. Your network should be the same. It should not be a fragile thing that breaks when you change its coordinates. It should be a resilient bubble that you carry with you. In the military, they call this comms on the move. Why should your home be any different?
So, to summarize for Daniel and anyone else facing a move, step one, Get your own router hardware, like that OPN Sense box, and stop using the ISP's DHCP. Step 2. Pick a unique internal IP range and stick to it forever. Step 3. Use a patch panel or a small rack to keep your wiring permanent and labeled. Step 4. Have a cellular backup for day 1 connectivity. And step 5. Use MoCA or pre-configured bridges to handle the unknown wiring of a new apartment.
And do not forget the labels. If I have to trace one more unlabeled white Ethernet cable in this house, Korn, I might lose my mind. I am talking about professional grade TIA standard labeling. If it is not labeled, it does not exist.
Fair point. I will buy a label maker this afternoon. One of those industrial ones that can do the vertical text.
Make sure it is the one that does the heat shrink tubing. If we are going pro, we are going all the way. I want those cables to look like they were installed by a defense contractor.
Spoken like a true Poppleberry. You know, thinking about the military aspect again, there is this concept of the black box where the complexity is hidden. I think for a lot of people, the goal is not just to have a cool network, it is to have a network they do not have to think about. By doing this advanced setup, you are actually making your life simpler in the long run. You are buying back your future time.
That is the great paradox of home networking. You have to go deep into the weeds of subnets and routing tables to reach a point where you never have to touch them again. It is an investment in future laziness. And as we know, the best engineers are the ones who are effectively lazy.
Future laziness is my favorite kind of investment. But seriously, the mental load of a move is so high. If you can take the entire tech side of that move and reduce it to a single checked item on a list, that is worth the weekend of setup. It is about reducing the cognitive load when you are already dealing with utility companies and security deposits.
Absolutely. And think about the troubleshooting side. If something is not working in the new place, you already know it is not your internal config. You have eliminated half of the variables. You know your NAS is fine, you know your IPs are fine. You can point at the wall and say, okay, the problem is between the wall and the street. That kind of clarity is priceless when you are tired and surrounded by cardboard boxes and you just want to watch Netflix.
I remember when we were moving into this place, you were so convinced the fiber line was bad, but it turned out the ISP had a weird MAC address lock on their modem. Because we had our own router, we were able to just clone the MAC address of their provided gear, and we were online in 5 minutes. If we had been using their basic gear, we would have been on the phone with support for 3 hours explaining what a MAC address is.
Oh, I had forgotten about that. Yes. That is another pro tip, MAC address cloning. Some ISPs are very picky about what hardware they talk to. If your OPN Sense box can pretend to be the ISP's router, you bypass all their hardware restrictions. It is digital camouflage.
It is all about reclaiming your digital sovereignty. You are the king of your 10.50.0.0 kingdom. You set the rules, you manage the borders, and you decide who gets an audience with the gateway.
Long live the king. And honestly, it makes you a better neighbor and housemate. When Daniel moved in, his devices just joined the kingdom. No fuss, no reconfiguring his laptop or his phone. He just walked in and his stuff worked. That is the dream.
Exactly. Well, I think we have given Daniel some good fuel for his next move. It is all about that abstraction and the physical discipline of the roadies. Front load the work, label everything, and build a system that does not care where it is located.
And if he ever decides to take his network on a world tour, he is halfway there. He just needs some road cases and a tour bus.
I can see it now. Daniel and his rack-mounted OPN Sense opening for you too. The world's first opening act that just provides high-speed Wi-Fi and stable DHCP for the front row.
Stranger things have happened in the tech world. I would pay for that ticket.
True. Well, this has been a great deep dive. I feel like I need to go reorganize my cable bin now. It is looking a little too amateur hours for my taste after this conversation.
I will help, but only if we can use the color-coded Velcro ties. No zip ties, Korn. We are not savages. Zip ties are a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Deal. Before we wrap up, I just want to say, if you are listening and you have found these tips helpful, or if you have your own moving day horror stories, we would love to hear them. Maybe you found a way to move a whole server rack in a smart car. We want to know how you did it.
We really do. We love seeing the weird prompts you all send in. You can always reach us through the contact form at myweirdprompts.com. We check that all the time, usually while waiting for a large file to transfer.
And thanks again to Daniel for sending this one in. It definitely made me look at our hallway rack with a bit more respect. It is not just a pile of blinking lights. It is our portable digital home.
It is a beautiful beast, Korn. A beautiful, portable beast. It is the heart of the Poppleberry Empire.
All right, that is it for this episode of My Weird Prompts. We will see you next week when we dive into whatever strange corner of the world Daniel or one of you points us toward next. I think someone mentioned something about the networking protocols used in deep sea submersibles, so stay tuned for that.
Until then, keep your subnets clean and your labels clear. And remember, if it is not in a rack, it is just a mess.
Bye, everyone.
Sakuru. See ya.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.